As the world grows more and more complex and fast-paced, dropping out to find a simpler way of living may seem all the more appealing. At the same time, it can seem like it's harder than ever to simplify our lives. And yet, some people do take the radical step to opt out of mainstream culture and create a more simple life.
Our next guest tells the story of three couples who took that step and managed to find simpler ways to live, eat, and work.
Mark Sundin joins us now. He's a contributing editor at Outside Magazine and the author of The Unsettlers, In Search of the Good Life in Today's America. Mark, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, why did you go looking for examples of people who are living lives against the grain, people that you call unsettlers?
Well, I just found that in my own life, I spent a lot of time doing things I didn't really like, which was to say, filling out paperwork or doing jobs that I didn't like just for the money. And then I also felt that the things I did just to stay alive, which is to say feed myself and put gas in my tank and finance my house, I seem to be supporting industries that were making the world a worse place. And I said, how can I break out of this cycle? And can I find people who've actually done this, who've led a life of resistance that didn't make them crazy or didn't make them completely broke?
And you call these people unsettlers. How would you define that?
Well, the phrase comes from the Wendell Berry book, The Unsettling of America, about how industrial food systems are sort of depopulating our farmland and destroying our soil. I use the term a lot more broadly, and I define it as people who have taken these steps to not just not drop out of society, but to rebuild systems of food, fuel, and finance that are sustainable and that give our lives more meaning.
This has a lot in common with the back-to-the-land idea that goes back to the 60s and or earlier. Is there anything different about the idea today and that back-to-the-land ethic?
Well, I think that the back-to-the-land movement was largely about dropping out. And in those days, if you got off the electrical grid, you could make the case that you were making a dissent against a system that destroys us. These days, because of technology and because of the Internet, you can live off the grid in absolute luxury, and you can trade stocks on Wall Street from the comfort of your little mountain palace. I actually wrote in my book that the off-grid commuter is just a suburbanite with a longer driveway. So these people, I think what makes them different and what makes this movement different is they're much more engaged in solving problems, sort of the worst problems that we face, which is to say racism and war and climate change. And the second thing that's different is that one of my families lives in Detroit, which totally surprised me when I discovered that during my research. I expected all of these people to be out in the boondocks in rural America, but instead some of the most innovative, dedicated, and radical people were in our cities and trying to revive them.
Right. You track in your book three different couples who are living various versions of unsettling. Can you introduce us to them?
Sure. The first family, Ethan and Sarah, they have founded a community, an intentional community in northeastern Missouri. And in some ways, they're the most radical in that they live without electricity, without cars. They don't travel in cars at all. They don't use airplanes. They don't have cell phones. I mean, they don't even have light bulbs. They basically are living very similar to the Amish. And also, they're dedicated to sort of nonviolent direct action and social change. The second family is Greg and Olivia, who are in Detroit. Olivia is African-American. She was born in Detroit, and she has this sort of miraculous story where she got a great education and a scholarship to college, coming from a pretty disadvantaged beginning. And she didn't want to leave Detroit, and so she and her husband ended up starting a farm on a city block of vacant lots, and they're making a living selling vegetables. And the third family is Steve and Lucy, and they're near Missoula, Montana. And I included them because they've been doing this for 35 years now. And in that time, it really not compromised their ideals. They run an organic farm. But even without compromising, they've managed to succeed by almost every measure in America, which is to say they own a lot of beautiful land, they have a nice house, they've raised three children who have not been deprived of any of the opportunities that America has. And I thought that was fascinating, that they could be so committed to this alternative life and also achieve the American dream as we know it.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the first year or two was like for some of these couples? Because this isn't something that's, you know, by nature, it's not necessarily easy to pull off something like this. There can be poverty, there can be hardship, there can be personal risk involved. So what was it like for them?
Well, Steve and Lucy, beginning in the early 80s, they bought in as partners of this organic farm, and they lived in a teepee for about 5 or 7 years, and they were earning a salary of about $2,000 per year. And so, this is Montana, so it gets cold in a teepee, but, you know, they pulled all their water from the creek. They rode bicycles to the farm each morning, and they heated with the wood stove. They would bathe in a, by heating water on that stove. But I think the most important analysis of that is that they didn't feel like they were suffering. They absolutely thought they loved this. They thought it was so fun to live this way, and they didn't want to live in a big house and have electricity and have hot running water. Like, they thought this was fun. And I think that goes for all of the families. They've endured what we see as hardship, but they haven't done so by wearing a hair shirt or feeling like martyrs. They've actually pursued what they love to do, and it just happens to be far outside of the mainstream.
We're talking with Mark Sundin right now. He's a contributing editor at Outside Magazine, and we're talking about his new book. It's called The Unsettlers, In Search of the Good Life in Today's America. And Mark, one thing about these couples is that, you know, they're not people who just want to drop out of society, live off the grid. You write that they're also trying to tackle some of the world's problems, to find solutions. Can you talk about what they're doing to get that done?
Sure. I mean, to begin with, Greg and Olivia in Detroit, you can't talk about Detroit without talking about racism and race. And, you know, I mean, Detroit came to be an African-American city because of the great migration from black people leaving Jim Crow and coming up north. And then, of course, that was followed by the white flight, all the white people moving to the suburbs. And then this urban decay, which is why there's a bunch of vacant lots that can now be farmed on. So they're not just growing food. They're trying to revitalize the neighborhood. They're trying to, by example, empower the black community. You know, they're entrepreneurs. They own a business, and they give a lot back to the community. So it's much deeper than just we're growing a couple vegetables. Greg, who's Olivia's husband, he was a public school teacher for 20 years. And he said when he was young, he thought the way to change the world was through public education. Now he thinks it's through the local food movement.
You know, listening to these stories, I mean, it's appealing to me, and I know it's appealing to you, too. That's part of why you were drawn to this. But it can't, by definition, be something, it seems like, that everybody can pull off. Not everybody can make this happen with their finances or their life circumstances. But are there pieces of what you learned here about what these three couples have done that the rest of us can follow and make our own, if not going for the whole enchilada?
I hope so. I find these people incredibly inspiring, and the fact that they've had the courage and the imagination and the willpower to follow their dream, to follow their heart, makes me think I could do things in my own life. You know, another thing I'd add to that, though, is of course not everyone can live like this, but often I think we say that as a means of sort of excusing ourselves from changing our own behavior, because on a larger scale, like, not everyone can live like me. If everyone lived like me in the world, we would need four planet Earth to give me enough food and gas and, you know, other materials. So the way that Americans live is unsustainable. The way these people are living may not be replicable, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't or we can't imagine something more similar to what they do.
So can you think of one or two things that we could do that would be getting us a little ways toward that?
There's all sorts of small things, from taking money. If you don't like Wall Street, if you don't like banks, take your money out of the bank, put it in your local credit union, or refinance your house with a local credit union. You can rethink, where does your fuel come from? Can you bike or walk or take public transportation instead of supporting these oil companies that are denying climate change and hastening it? But ultimately, like, this book isn't a prescriptive. It's not about, here are some things you can do to save the earth. This is a book, I hope, that will encourage people to look into their heart and follow it. And I guess I have this optimism that if we look into our heart, we're going to find a better vision.
And Mark, as we wrap up, what did this dive into unsettling mean for you in your own life?
Yeah, what I found in these couples was they had this courage to pursue the thing that they loved. And when they did that, they sort of found that abundance appeared around them. It wasn't like they cut out a bunch of the things that they loved and suffered and then felt self-righteous. It's they pursued what they loved. And for me, you know, I don't necessarily love farming and homesteading as much as these people, but I was able to commit to things that I did love, which was my writing and activism. I built Strawbill House after I finished this book. I spent some time up in Standing Rock reporting on that and being a part of that movement. So I guess it was just to find ways to do work that I loved that also gave my life meaning.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was writer Mark Sundin. He's a contributing editor at Outside Magazine and the author of The Unsettlers, In Search of the Good Life in Today's America.
Coming up, we'll talk about how climate change is being discussed on Capitol Hill during the Senate confirmation hearings. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.